Hi everyone, and welcome back to the BPN podcast, your go-to space for all things personal development, career support, and well-being for apprentices. I'm Ant, and joined this time by my co-hosts Anne-Marie and Nick.
Hi everyone.
Hello.
Hi Nick. I'm Anne-Marie, thank you. And for this particular podcast, where we will be discussing the long title of Finance, Workforce Planning and Procurement, I'm delighted to also welcome our special guest, Matthew Smith, who is a participant on our school senior leader level 7 apprenticeships.
Hello, welcome everyone, and thanks for having me along.
Thank you very much for being here, Matthew. Pleasure. Really appreciate it. Exactly, yeah, it's a pleasure. Okay then, so quite an interesting topic here, as we said, a long title of Finance, Workforce Planning and Procurement. So a lot to get through. Nick, I know you wanted to sort of just open us up with something to maybe appeal to or everyone that might be listening to us today.
Yeah, thanks, Ant. I think I just wanted to start with how daunting this whole area of finance, procurement, and all those other words that you said there, certainly as an emerging leader, I just never understood. I'm guessing most people in from a practitioner point of view, whatever the setting, whatever the background, whether you're great with kids, whether it's delivery of the curriculum or whatever, we've come up through that practical route. And in that time, resources are there. Stuff is available, whether it's people or paper or materials or whatever it is. And then as you pop through up into leadership, you think, where's all that stuff come from? How do we get all these people? Where does all that magical stuff appear from? It's the biggest genuine piece of learning that I've ever had to do in my leadership journey, is at least understanding where the budget comes from, how things are derived. And again, at practitioner level, you might get grumpy about limitations on resources or why haven't I got this thing or this person that I need? And just moving through into this level of understanding and appreciating, even if you don't practically get involved, because I know that lots of settings have business managers or different finance operations, you know, different trusts or schools or whatever. So you may not practically get involved in it, but it just dawns on me that popping out of the classroom bubble, as it were, you then find yourself in this hazy world of what is going on here? Where's all this come from? So, yeah, I wanted to start with a reassurance. Yes, it's difficult. It's unusual. This is new. It's one of the biggest areas. Another, and you have often reflected this. It's one of the biggest things in early leadership that you had to come across, which is having to navigate some of this stuff that previously was completely just off the radar.
Yeah. Oh no, 100%. It is the area where you are taught to teach. You know, back in the day, because I'm a dinosaur, I was taught even back with the chalkboards to write in a straight line and use multicolored chalk on the board. So there was training within my university on that. But and the other thing, I think that's a really interesting point. Not only then would I say I wasn't as prepared for that aspect of the diverse range of strategic leadership roles that I would need to have. Also, I was tentative. I was cautious. You know, I was thinking, how do I go about making these decisions when I knew they would be affecting people? And I would sort of feel slightly reticent or cautious. I would sort of say lots of words like, "Oh, we'll take that into consideration. We'll review that. We'll take time to think about that." And I don't know, Matthew. You know, as a practitioner yourself at the moment, you know, do you find that is a struggle? Because I'm new. Initially, I would always be cautious to make those more difficult decisions. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I absolutely think so. And I think it's right to have an element of cautiousness to it. It's such a massive area of management and leadership within education, and often an area that the regulators very infrequently inspect or review as well, which is always sort of an interest to me. But I think what you do need to do once you get sort of comfortable within your setting or within your trust is absolutely be bold. When you know you've got the due diligence behind you, when you know you've got the support of stakeholders, is to absolutely understand, you know, what's draining our resource or what's not functioning correctly, and be bold and make the big decisions. Sometimes those decisions mean having to change a provision or change structures. Sometimes those changes are bringing in new initiatives, increasing the provision to expand into a further key stage or to be more inclusive in your practice. That comes with cost, comes with workforce and procurement arrangements, but you have to be bold and you have to sometimes be very decisive. And that can be really difficult because they're not always skills taught on some of the formal courses in and around education. It's great that we're able to focus on this today as part of sort of, you know, what we do. So yeah, be bold and think strategically.
Interesting point, Joe. Nick?
Can I just ask you, Matthew? I mean, that's really powerful way of articulating it, that I think you said, you know, the boldness comes after confidence, you know, the early stage is understanding, and then once you've got the understanding, just wanted to check with you, how often do you use options? I mean, I can reflect on a great business manager I worked with who would often give me three or four different versions, whether we were looking at contracts or looking at next year's staffing plan. And I often found, I don't know how you feel, if I had options, some options were like unpalatable, think, oh, people will hate that, that's not going to work. Other options would say, well, you could do that, but there's a bit of a risk in there. Are you hinting that boldness comes from evaluating different ways of looking at things and maybe looking at trade-offs and just thinking, well, we could do this, but then that won't happen? How does that work for you?
Yeah, 100%. There is always going to be a trade-off in these areas. Mm. And yeah, I would always present my, you know, strategic leadership team here, my colleagues, with two or three options. But what I try to do before that is I try to take a couple of steps back, because what you also find in the roles that we sit in is we sometimes hold information about future changes much sooner than anybody else in the school community, particularly other staff, pupils, parents.
Yes.
So sometimes I like to think about how they might interpret the decision as well. So my options will also consider how other people will receive this change, this improvement, this adjustment as well. So yeah, absolutely options, absolutely have to, you know, trade off risk versus maybe affordability versus doability, because with every will in the world, every school would like to be inclusive to anybody that comes, you know, in.
Yeah.
Every school would like to be able to offer every subject going that any child wanted to do. And simply that's not possible, but be bold. And I think, yeah, options, absolutely. That having done the job now for 19 years, that's just sort of within my daily sort of part of what I do. Two or three options are always presented and are considered fully.
So can I just jumped on that then, Matthew? So if we're talking about communication, which you kind of already mentioned a bit, so when would you communicate with your staff, for instance, of any changes, any financial decisions?
Always face to face, always in a comfortable environment. So there may need to be cake, there may need to be dinner refreshments, there may need to be consideration of the environment, particularly if it's a tricky decision. And sometimes a tricky decision doesn't mean anybody's losing their job. A tricky decision to the eyes of some of our staff or families might mean, oh, they're increasing provision. Why are we're only an infant school, now we're going to become a full primary school? What's all that about? And so it's not necessarily that they're contentious decisions in the sense of why you'd want to do it and nobody can lose. So absolutely face to face, very clear, very concise. But also think about, you know, I've been holding this information for maybe 6 months, 9 months, a year even. How did I feel when I first received it? What was going through my mind, and try and sort of develop the communication at that point. Definitely not PowerPoints, definitely not an email, absolutely face-to-face. And I think school communities, like we teach children face-to-face, we encourage children to change. Transition days into alternative provisions and new destinations is always face-to-face. The change should be afforded, you know, that same amount of attention for staff and other stakeholders.
And how would you do the same with the parents, for instance?
in our setting, which is all through complex needs school setting, our parents are invited into the school on many occasions. If we're going to consult on anything or have conversations, we have regular coffee mornings. We would have a presence there. We'd be doing that. We have a majority of families that pick children up and drop them off every day. Leadership teams are present every day. It's really important that people can reach out to us. So if we've had to communicate by a letter, which is not always our preferred option, we have that face-to-face backup sort of immediately if it's needed.
Absolutely, thank you. Yeah. And one of the questions also I'm always asking myself about the planning and how you prioritize, how would you do this? Maybe Ant, your experience in...
Yeah, so thanks, Henry. It's useful, hopefully, for our listeners now, as you're listening to this, wherever you are. You know, are you in the car, are you running, are you on the bike, walking the dog, etc.? It's useful to have the discussion. We hope that you're reflecting on what we're saying, but also, is there some kind of structure we can give, you know, some kind of suggested way in which to approach this? And perhaps you'd like to give some thought to how you'd review the organizational information. What kind of financial forecasting information do you have to hand? You know, for example, it's not just what your business managers give you. You might have birth rate information locally, perhaps, that you can access. So the local authority will have this available to you. It'll be government figures. Then identify your key strategic risks and the pressures. You know, there might be risks. What's likely to happen? Agree your strategic priorities, perhaps, for the next 3 years. Some people plan with a diamond nine. They've got a nine-year plan, perhaps. You know, if you're thinking of a standard school as 7 years within it, you might want to think about what's happening the year before and the year after, which therefore makes a nine-year plan for the cycle of a child in your school. And then prepare some sort of strategic briefing, whatever governance you've got, if it's a board, if it's, you know, if it's a private school, etc. And then if that's quite a lot to think about, but then you might want to think about the following words. So you could determine which of those areas should be the following: protected, prioritized, developed, reduced, deferred, or reconsidered. So, you know, pause that and rewind it, but that might be something for you to think about. So, Nick, any thoughts on what I've given on?
Yeah, I just really like the language that you've used there, because in my opening salvo was, this is really complicated and difficult and this is brand new. But actually what you've done there in terms of leadership approaches and just the language, you don't need in-depth level of accountancy understanding to agree a priority or to identify a risk or to review some information. So I think what reassures me there is at whatever stage you are at a leadership level, just bringing your intellect to it. Although finance and procurement and workforce planning sounds highly complex, what you've done there, you've distilled it down to those key strategic words that we're familiar with. So I think it empowers people to say, and you mentioned governors, there's one particular governor I worked with for a good few years, a very senior civil servant, could hardly ever get to meetings but would dial in, always up in London, but just asked the most penetrating questions based on the kind of language you were using there. I mean, not an accountant, nobody with any kind of grand intellectual grasp of, you know, the complexity, just really powerful questions, very good verbs, you know, that protect, prioritize, develop, reduce, reconsider. They're just really good leadership. That's just really good leadership language, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah. Regardless of what the content is.
Mm. Yeah, lovely. Yeah, and I think I'm always intrigued by, you know, when we might talk in school, and say for me from a primary background, we might talk about, oh, somebody mentions the word fractions, or somebody says something to do with maths, and people recoil in horror because, oh, it's maths kind of thing. So I've always tried to break down that barrier anyway. But I used to think it was always interesting when people would ask you when you started in a new role about, do you have experience in this part? Have you taught this year group, for example? Or have you worked in this type of X, Y, or Z? And I'd go, yes or no, depending. But I'd also say, I'm not a cook either, or I'm not a facilities manager either, but I'm also responsible as the leader, the strategic lead, for all of those things, facilities, premises, catering. I don't have to have, and as you said, Nick, if I could apply a set of structures, a template that I could apply. I could go in and it's interesting you said that, it's made me think of it now. I could go in and ask that question of the catering team, the facilities team, the finance team, the administrative team. Didn't matter who I'm speaking to, I could still ask the questions that got me the answers I needed and then rely on, you know, let's say like Matthew now, an expert in the field, who I would then turn to and say, this is what I strategically think would happen. Matthew, over to you. You know, what do you literally think? I would come to you and say, you know, over to you.
Yeah, and I would just like to sort of speaking to those listening today, you know, around sort of the emerging inspiring leaders is I absolutely in the roles I've had welcome that challenge or that question or that conversation, because so often colleagues in the role that I do just feel so sort of separate and siloed and sometimes wheeled out when there's a problem to solve, not be part of the solution that's already there or strengthening provision. So absolutely, I would like to have options that I present questioned. I would like to be tackled on an assumption that I may have made. I would like to be better grounded maybe with some of the learning and pedagogy that maybe I'm not trained in, because there are absolutely many elements of running an effective school or college or nursery provision, for example, that I absolutely couldn't, you know, sort of argue about. So yeah, I really reflect on that point, and I think that's really, really important. Definitely. And then sort of, I suppose more boldly, when I'm thinking about what I do, what I present, what part I play in supporting, I think it's good whatever role you have within a school or want to have in a school, you've absolutely got to link it back to why you're there. You've got to link it back to children, the learners, possibly their families. In the school I'm in, we very much are about supporting the family is supporting the child. So we have a much broader, you know, scope than other schools. What, you know, what is the impact of doing this? And so often I see schools go down a route of best value and tendering practice, which is absolutely commendable and needs to be done. And there's lots of frameworks around there that would support that and why you need to do it. But I think sometimes think about whether saving a penny on a box of paper or on toilet paper was worth the 18, 19, 20 hours of investment, where you can have reached out to multiple stakeholder organizations, created some really strong links, maybe even involved learning opportunities in it, and as a result have got grant funding in place or secured heavily discounted residential provision or have found, you know, local suppliers. And I think I'm really important that, you know, it's got to be, you know, everybody's time is precious. Anybody that wants to aspire, you know, through the various roles within leadership, you know, time is precious and you need to really think about how is this going to impact on learning and outcomes for our children as they move into sort of adulthood.
Yeah. Brilliant. You made me smile there, Matthew.
The bit there, what are you going to say? You look like
that. I had a little chuckle there because, you know, Matthew just reminded me, words like best value, I'm just trying to, this is a cheeky comment really, for those listening. If you want to get ahead, if you want to impress people, it's just finding those words that make it sound like you know what you're talking about. And I think, you know, is that best value? And the other one that goes down really well is return on investment. That everyone loves that one. Yeah, ROI. Is it worth it? And you said it, you know, business manager can spend hours at a rate of £25 an hour, whatever you pay them, to save yourself a penny somewhere else. So there's really good case study. And evidence, you know, to back it all up. But just as a cheeky throwaway, learning the language, best value, return on investment, you know, all that kind of stuff can really help you engage with those people that clearly are business managers, people with a banking background, people with great, you know, structural knowledge. You're not trying to kid them. They do know their stuff. But we're leaders and we have to kind of herd the cats, don't we? We have to sort of bring it all to happen. Because ultimately, as you said, Matthew, our decisions, our designs, it's got to have kids and students and learners and a wider community as the key benefactor from all the stuff. But you made me smile with some of those interesting little words there. Thank you for doing that.
Matthew, do you want to come back on that?
Yeah, and the other thing I wanted just to say as well is that, you know, staffing within every school, your workforce is your biggest asset, your biggest...
Absolutely, you are.
And yeah, also one of the areas where it will create you some of the biggest, you know, challenge and workload. Mm. And that's fine. And for us, return on investment, best value in our school is being open, having those honest conversations with people and being sort of trying to model some of those ethical leadership values across everything that we do, whether it's a return to work interview, whether it's an interview, whether it's supporting somebody who's going through a difficult time, whether it's finding a really appropriate course for somebody to enhance their learning and development. And I think you've got to just, yeah, absolutely focus on what it is there. Happy workforce, happy pupils. You're probably 75% the way there of an easier Ofsted inspection framework and school improvement and SEF process. And I think it mustn't be forgotten.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, that's a statistic. That's a statistic to close on, isn't it? It's like, right, let's get 75% of the way there. That would be good in anybody's book. Yeah. So, no, thank you so much, everybody. Today, it's sometimes it's perceived as a challenging area, but I think if you approach, you know, perhaps the tools or the kind of template we've shared with you today, some of the comments we've had from myself and the co-host today, if you are able to apply the same strategic thinking and structure, you would be able to manage all of the many aspects that you may find within, strategic school or organizational leadership. So many thanks to everybody for being here today and your contribution. So I'd like to specifically thank my co-hosts, of course, Anne-Marie and Nick, and a very special thank you to Matthew for joining us. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, and share this episode with your network. It really does help us spread the word. Until next time, perhaps be bold, and also, of course, take care.